Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, November 15th, 2011, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. And Sierra, our other co-host, will be joining us in the second hour this evening. Tonight, we are pleased to introduce Farah Yurdajou, a UFO investigator, author of several best-selling books, international speaker, and writer for UFO Magazine. Her remarkable story goes back four generations in her family, and we've recorded that story for you, as well as Lavendar's interview with her, since she is in Turkey, and there's quite a time difference. Farah is known on several continents as an authority on UFOs, the paranormal, and metaphysics, and her gifts as a psychic medium were recently featured in TLC's paranormal investigation TV series called Dead Tenants. She's also a journalist producer for Jerry Pippin Internet Radio, and you may remember Jerry from his appearance on our show a few weeks ago. Farah's website is Farah Yurdajou, and I will spell this for you, FarahYurdajou.com. And I have posted that website on our show comments on the show page. And speaking of Jerry Pippin, Lavendar will be on his show tomorrow, that's Wednesday, at, we believe, 7 Central. And the website for that is InceptionRadioNetwork.com/listen-live. Lavendar will also tonight be talking about Pleiadian lineup, as it is just beginning. This only happens twice a year, so stay tuned if you don't know about it yet. We want to thank Purple Sage and Tammy for hosting the chat room and switchboard this evening. Purple Sage will forward your questions to us if you can't call. If you can call, our number is 917-889-8292. And make sure you press 1 so we know you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/starseed-radio-academy. If you haven't yet, please click follow on our show page to help our show become more visible, and you'll also get notifications of our upcoming topics immediately. And if you like the show, remember to tell a friend. We are well over the 64,000 listens mark, so thanks to all of you for tuning in each week and helping spread the word. On our main site, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. We'll get started in just a minute, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone consultation. You can find out if you have star markings and how they determine your natural state and rites of passage. We now offer a Stage 4 service with Sierra for contactees and abductees, so check out Sierra's World on our main site. Don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so make the most of it. And now I would like to introduce my co-host, Lavendar. Just say hello before we get rolling here.
Well, hello, Arielle, and all of our listeners. This is Pleiad in lineup, and the energies are very, very strong, and I've been really feeling great all day, and I'm really excited about the next 3 or 4 days. And at the end of this, the first hour, I'll come on and I will talk about more about Pleiadian lineup. So everybody, stay tuned. So let's hear what our friend Farah has to say.
Okay. Now this first part is Farah's story, which because of the connection that we had, I just went ahead and read it. So this will be me reading Farah's story, and then we'll follow up with the recorded interview with Farah herself in Turkey. All right, here we go.
This is Ariel reading Farah's story. Three generations of contact and psychic gifts in my family. The jinn or ETs. Three generations of a Turkish family's paranormal experiences by Farah Yurdizu. This article takes up a major question confronting ufology. Are traditional paranormal manifestations different from contemporary UFO manifestations? Are they separate phenomena using the same highway? Are the traditional phenomena evidence of ancient ET involvement with the human race? My native country, Turkey, has always been a land where spiritual, paranormal, or unexplained phenomena are considered normal. Turkish history goes back at least 6,000 years and is full of stories about beings who came from the sky bringing higher knowledge to the human race. Knowledge about our remote ancestors who married the visitors from the sky is written in our history, traditions, and literature. That is why beings from other dimensions, from space, and the existence of a spiritual universe are facts for us, not science fiction. It's the same in my family as well. I come from a family whose members can see ghosts, communicate with spirits, see the future, and whom I believe have often been visited by extraterrestrial beings. I don't remember when I first thought about extraterrestrial life or interdimensional beings. From the time I was aware of myself as a tiny child in Istanbul, I was aware of the existence of different life forms around us. Even though they weren't visible to us in the physical sense all the time, they used to make themselves obvious to me using other subtle means of communication. Sometimes it would be the soul of a deceased family member, sometimes the spirits of strangers. I would feel a kind of vibration, the pressure of their energy, and then I could usually see them as well. Sometimes I would recognize a departed spirit who was appearing as a normal physical being. This activity became pronounced in my early teens, and at 13, I was taken to Istanbul's Center for Metaphysical Research, a very old institution, where I became their hypnotic trance medium. As I grew up, these spirits became my guides, and later they spoke to me through my family and its history. In the late 1890s, something happened to my family. Since then, for three generations, our destiny has been shaped by unknown visitors. This very real life story is still going on. I heard it from my mother, and she heard it from her mother. It was never a secret in our family. It was talked about openly without fear of ridicule, just as other personal stories of the paranormal are accepted in Turkish society. I used to spend hours with my grandmother and mom listening to their fascinating stories. Often, around the dinner table or over tea, they would talk about spirits, ghosts, mysteries of the unknown world. There was always a story about a family member, an uncle or an aunt, who had a paranormal or unexplained experience. It was from them I learned my great-grandfather's story. The first contactee in my family was my great-grandfather, Refik Kiris. He was one of the first French and mathematics teachers at Istanbul University and a well-known author. In the late 1890s, he was a young teacher, married with five children, two boys and three girls, who inherited his passion for writing, teaching, and academic careers. But there was more. They also inherited a strange destiny which caused our family to experience heightened spiritual consciousness as well as extreme pain and sorrow in later years. Refik Kiris was a talented and idealistic teacher, but the salary he received from the government was meager, and from time to time his family had financial difficulties. According to my mother, in those days, my great-grandfather felt completely helpless about his financial situation. One day, when his wife and children were away visiting relatives in another city, something unusual happened. As my great-grandfather stepped out of his house to go to the university, he saw an old man smiling at him from the opposite sidewalk. The old man approached Refik and spoke to him. Though he was a stranger, the old man knew my great-grandfather's name, knew about his family, his job, even his financial problems. The stranger insisted he was ready to help and told Refik that late in the night he would have some visitors, visitors he should not fear. As a scientific young man, my great-grandfather didn't take this conversation seriously. He quickly forgot about the funny old man and busied himself at the university with his students. That night he came home and went to bed. Before he fell asleep, the bedroom door opened. Two visitors entered, the visitors the old man had mentioned. But there was something he had not mentioned. These visitors weren't human. They were tall, and though they walked on two legs, my great-grandfather later insisted they had reptilian characteristics, such as elliptical pupils. My great-grandfather used the word monsters when he described these visitors. He recalled they wore no clothes. Their skin was dark, oily, and partly covered with hair. They had horns and tails. This was in the days long before movies and mass media, so the only things that might have informed his descriptions of these beings would have been traditional depictions of monsters and devils, or the reality of their appearance itself. Though the stranger had said not to fear the visitors, it was impossible not to, especially since they looked at my great-grandfather through the elliptical pupils of a snake's eyes. Refik tried to move, scream, do something, but it was impossible. He was under a total paralysis. The reptilian visitors were trying to communicate with him. He felt a heavy pressure over his body. At the same time, a strange vibration filled the room. His bed started to shake. One of the reptilians stood at the headboard of the bed, while the other stayed at the foot. Refik fought against them mentally. He repeated again and again that they were not allowed to be in his home and commanded them to leave. Refik was unaware how much time elapsed. At the end of the night, the two reptilians left him. While they were going, they looked at him and said something about his family. He remembered these words spoken telepathically in his mind. From you to three generations. And then they were gone. Refik was in shock. He couldn't sleep the rest of the night. He dressed and decided to leave for the university very early. Outside, another surprise was waiting. There was the old man he had met one day before. The stranger looked at him with disappointment and said, "I believed you were an intelligent man. You lost a big chance." After these words, he left. Refik preferred to forget about this incident, and there was no one to talk to about it anyway. This was decades before science fiction had filled people's imaginations with this kind of incident. In those years, no one knew about UFOs, extraterrestrials, gray or reptilian races. For Refik, these two visitors were demons coming from a dark source. Angels, demons, jinn, they were known in the spiritual and religious fields in Turkey. But reptilian extraterrestrials would be discovered only much later. This case has some of the familiar and some different aspects compared to other well-known reptilian encounters. The case starts with the intervention of a normal-looking human, the old man. We don't know anything about him, except he apparently had control over the reptilian visitors, as it seems he sent them to Refik's house. And the next morning, the old man knew everything that had happened in my great-grandfather's home. Did this man send the reptilians on a mission to help my great-grandfather? Today, in some contact cases, abductees and contactees mention the presence of normal-looking humans who work together with ETs. Did the same thing happen in Refik's case over 100 years ago? The reptilian visitors never appeared again to my great-grandfather, but soon he noticed they had left him and his family with something that would stay with us through the years until today. After the frightening visit, Refik's wife and children came home. He told everything to his wife. They were convinced the beings were evil visitors, and they decided to try to forget about the case. But it would be impossible to forget. After a while, they noticed their 5-year-old son was able to see ghosts. Wherever he went, he saw beings, heard voices, communicated with people only he could see. The other children also suddenly developed psychic abilities. For instance, one of the daughters, my grandmother, became a capable psychic medium. All her life she dealt with ghosts, apparitions, and spiritual contact just like her sisters and brothers. One night, my grandmother woke in her bed and saw the figure of a lady in the room. Although this happened in the 1940s, the lady was wearing an outfit typical of World War I years. The spirit was young, tall, and beautiful with her dark eyes and tan skin. The image was so real, my grandmother had enough time to look at her elegant hat, brown long skirt, and jacket. She had a nice purse and gloves. The visitor came closer to the bed, took off her gloves, and extended her hand to shake my grandmother's hand. My grandmother had the telepathic feeling the lady was there to thank her. When their hands touched, my grandmother screamed in terror as the visitor's hand was dead cold. At that moment, the elegant lady disappeared. After that, the family did some research, speaking to other family members and neighbors and looking through neighbors' photo albums, and they found the visitor was a Greek woman who used to live in the home and had died in the First World War. My grandmother has called her Madam since then. My grandmother and her siblings were the first generation of psychics in our family. Something made them psychic. Something was given to my family which opened their spiritual third eye to the unknown. When the reptilian visitors said, "From you to 3 generations," did they mean these psychic powers? As the children grew, psychic and paranormal activity around them persisted, and their power affected others. On one occasion, everyone in the family witnessed a daytime doppelganger and shape-shifting phenomena. This happened during an open-air family picnic in the yard of their home. It was summer, and family members were visiting. While they were sitting and having their lunch with elderly Aunt Kaiser, they also saw her walking out from the home. The same woman was at 2 different locations at the same time. As they watched Aunt Kaiser's double, the apparition shape-shifted into a black dog. The dog barked a few times and disappeared. The family searched for the dog, but it was gone. Paranormal and poltergeist activity became part of the family's daily life. Although they changed their home and lived in Morocco for a while, the activity didn't stop. The activity was connected to them, not the location or house in which they were living. Years passed. Refik's 2 sons became lawyers and his 3 daughters teachers. Throughout their lives, they investigated paranormal and psychic phenomena and performed spiritual channeling as hypnotic trance mediums. Neighbors and strangers would come to them to receive messages from departed loved ones. Meanwhile, nobody was talking about UFOs and extraterrestrial visitors. All were focused on the spirits, ghosts, and other aspects of mediumship. This was the first generation of psychics in my family. My mother, Talen, and my aunt, Umran, were from the 2nd generation, and they were psychic too. And I am the 3rd generation psychic paranormal researcher from my family. What happened that night to Refik Kiris is a big mystery. Did the reptilian visitors really want to help him? Was their gift to him a psychic talent to be passed on to his children? Maybe the help or gift was the ability to communicate with beings from other dimensions. Maybe the richness wasn't material, but something spiritual, such as understanding the cosmos, such as understanding the possibilities of a cosmos peopled with endless numbers of beings, such as being open-minded and accepting the truth. Thinking back on all the stories of strange experiences I heard in our family, I'm convinced my grandmother and her siblings were abducted many times, although they had no idea about alien abductions, because what they described fits well with today's alien abduction cases, such as sudden trances, mysterious abortions, and unexplained physical marks on the skin. As we see in many abduction cases today, the phenomenon influenced them in both positive and negative ways. They became successful in their professional lives, but there were always problems in their personal lives, such as unhappy marriages, problems with having children, or financial difficulties. Of Refik's 5 children, only my grandmother and her older sister were able to have children. The other 2 brothers and 1 sister were childless. And in their time, medicine didn't offer much help. I have observed today that many abductees remain childless. Did they lose their ability to have children due to medical experiments or procedures conducted by their extraterrestrial abductors? My grandmother married in 1935. From this marriage, my mother, Talin, and my aunt, Umran, were born. At very young ages, both manifested psychic talents. My aunt had constant visitors she wasn't able to find words to describe. She used to pass into a trance by herself and stay in that state for hours. She never married and died young from a puzzling liver ailment in 1975. As for my mother, she was a sleepwalker since she was a little girl and had strange UFO-related encounters. For instance, following what I believe was an abduction in 1990, my mother found, and the family observed, white spots on her arm, as if the pigment had vanished from the skin. Her doctors weren't able to determine what caused the white spots, which remained for many years. When Talin and Umran were little girls, they would wake up with a strange brown color paint on their palms almost every morning. The brown color paint is well known in Turkish tradition and is considered the trace of the jinn. People believe the jinn come to visit young children in the night, take them somewhere, and early in the morning bring them back to their beds. The brown paint is believed to be a remnant of the jinn visitation. The jinn are supernatural entities in the Turkish culture. We'll see more about the jinn later in this article. And it happened to me as well. At a young age, I started to have night visitors who came through the closed windows of my 3rd-floor bedroom in the early hours of the morning. For some reason, I always woke up just before they appeared. First, I would see gray clouds in the sky. The clouds would come through the closed window, change shape, and become 3 people: a young woman, a young man, and an old woman. When my mother saw the brown paint on my palms for the first time, she smiled and said, "Just like we had when we were little. The jinn took you away last night." I was 2 or 3 years old. I remember the brown paint well. It was so difficult to wash away. I used to wake up with these marks almost every morning. I was an only child and spent a lot of time playing by myself. One of my favorite games was something I believed I invented: going out of my body with my soul. I don't remember how I discovered I could perform this astral projection or out-of-body experience, but I used to lie down and easily let my soul leave my physical body. Being able to fly out of my body was a wonderful sensation. Complete freedom. It was the easiest thing to do and lots of fun. In time, I started to predict future events. Some were good and some very sad. In 1975, my aunt, grandmother, and grandfather died, and this was a period of pain and sadness. But despite those years of emotional difficulties, I believe being able to communicate with other dimensions, to know we are not the only intelligent beings in the universe, and that ETs and interdimensional visitors are a part of universal reality, were worth the pain. Following my family's heritage, I have chosen to keep on the path of being an investigator, writer on the paranormal and UFO field. I started to write professionally on UFOs and paranormal subjects in the late 1980s in my native Turkey. I am not the only psychic in my family's third generation. One of my cousins began experiencing severe abductions about 10 years ago. Almost twice a week, she woke up with bruises and cuts on her skin. A short time after this, my cousin began to spontaneously see future events, such as an accident, somebody's death, or a cheating husband. And during this very period of my cousin's abductions and psychic manifestations, her wealthy husband lost everything he owned in a short time. At my suggestion, my cousin read one of my books on abductions published in Turkey, but she and her husband interpret abduction and contact as evil jinn attacks. They blamed the jinn, or whatever beings gave my cousin her psychic ability, for her husband's financial disaster. In the last 2 years, the abductions of my cousin have reduced, and she no longer practices psychic readings. She and her husband have founded a new business together and have started a new life. A sudden and unexpected spiritual paranormal experience became a severe life lesson for this young couple. Now they don't want to hear anything about paranormal cases, and they deny the ET abduction possibility. For them, everything was the work of the evil jinn. I have mentioned the jinn several times in this article. Here is some history. Before Islam, the Turkish nation's religion was shamanism. Today, in various parts of Asia, there are still shamanic Turkish groups. Shaman are gifted spiritual leaders who are said to be able to communicate with the jinn. According to shamanic Turkish and Islamic beliefs, the jinn are interdimensional beings who were created by the same God who created the universe, galaxies, planets, angels, humans, animals, and plants. The jinn are referenced numerous times in the Quran, and belief in the jinn is everywhere in the Islamic world, not just in Turkey. For example, in the Quran, God says, "I have only created jinn and man that they may serve me." And elsewhere we find, "And indeed, we created man from dried clay and altered mud, and the jinn we created aforetime from the smokeless flame of fire." Anyone who doubts the Islamic world holds closely to belief in the jinn should take a closer look at the cover story in the current issue of Smithsonian Magazine. The article features Sufi religious practices in Pakistan, including wild dancing intended to purge evil spirits known as jinns. The jinn became known in the Western world in the 18th century with publication of 1001 Nights, a collection of ancient Middle Eastern folk tales popular in Europe and America. Perhaps the most famous of these tales is about Aladdin and the genie, who lived inside Aladdin's magic lamp. Genie is the English translation of the Arabic word genie, J-I-N-N-I. Current-day Islamic religious authorities continue to assert the reality of the jinn, But for Muslims, to form the relationships with the jinn is frowned upon, and the Quran prescribes specific procedures for exorcising jinn, since it is believed evil jinn have the power to take possession of human beings. Since Islamic resources make it clear the origin of the jinn is fire which has no smoke, is it possible the jinn were made from a kind of energy? According to popular belief in Turkey, the jinn have no physical body. It is said they can shapeshift and can assume a physical body temporarily when they visit us in our dimension. They can manifest as a man, a woman, or an animal. They don't belong to our world. They can spend only a limited time among us. People believe the jinn can easily make themselves visible or invisible, and it is written the jinn can see us even though we cannot see them. In ancient drawings, the jinn are represented as half-human, half-reptilian-looking beings with horns, tails, reptile eyes, and claw-like hands. According to Turkish belief, the jinn have gender, female and male. Jinn marry and have their own children and families. Although they have no physical body, they are very interested in human sexuality. They often have sexual relationships with human men and women. Since ancient times, night visits by the jinn are a well-known paranormal aspect in Turkish society. Today in Turkey, there are men who claim they have a jinn wife, and women who claim they became pregnant by their jinn husbands. They also claim to have half-human, half-jinn offspring. But, according to them, these hybrid babies live in another dimension with the jinn, and they cannot spend much time in our physical dimension. The jinn are very interested in human children. As I mentioned earlier, they take them somewhere in the night, and at the end of the night bring them back. Or sometimes they exchange human children with jinn children, as if they are trying to create a new hybrid nation. In some close encounters with jinn, the visited humans develop psychic and paranormal abilities, such as remote viewing, spiritual healing, telepathy, or mediumship. But getting close to the jinn also has physical effects on the contactee's body. After a jinn visit, the human contactee may wake up with bruises or cuts. In Turkey, we call this beaten up by the jinn. Another aspect of jinn visits I discussed earlier. It is the brown-colored substance found on the skin of the visited children. The same brown-colored paint or substance has been found on the body and clothes of some contemporary abductees in the United States, in Israel, and on me. As you can see, contact with the jinn causes many of the same results as contact with ETs. There is so much similarity between the cases that I have to wonder, are the jinn and the ETs coming from the same source? Or are they the same beings? We really don't have the right answer in this moment. And I am not the only one who has thought about this. The American ufologist Anne Druffel and the British ufologist, the late Gordon Crichton, have written about the jinn in books and articles. They believe the jinn and the ETs do come from the same source. One thing is sure. With experience, we learn better and faster. And personally, I believe I have a reasonable amount of practice and experience on this subject, thanks to my family's 3 generations of contact. For some reason, our family was chosen and given a certain amount of knowledge. I believe every piece of information about this phenomenon is going to help us understand better the reality of the extraterrestrial presence.
Well, that is Farah Yurdaju's story, and I have to say that I had to read that several times to really absorb it before I recorded it, but all we can say is, Farah, when you listen to this, what courage you have to be coming with this story, and at the same time, lucky that your family, that you can talk about it openly, and you have the support of your family. Next, we have the interview that Lavendar did with Farah. This was recorded and over Skype, so I hope you can hear it well enough. This is Lavendar's interview with Farah Yurdajou.
So on Starseed Radio Academy this evening, we have Farah Yurdajou from Turkey, and she has had this incredible experience, and I have just read it to the audience. And so, Farah, welcome, and please give us some more insight to the things that you've learned since you have written this story.
Thank you very much for having me on your show, first of all. And to answer your question, this has been a very important part of my life since I was little. I'm sure that many of the abductees and contactees are saying the same thing. Because as far as we know, the contact starts when you were very young, when you were a child, or maybe before you were born. Am I right?
Yes, yes.
This happened.
Yes.
So I wrote my family story in my blog. In fact, in many of the conferences that I spoke, I talked about it. So it is not a new story, in fact. So many people who know me, now they know that story in detail. But now I'm going to repeat it very quickly. So it started in 19th century with my great-grandfather's, my grandmother's father, and he had a strange encounter. He wasn't ready, and he was very much scared. He wasn't ready in two ways. He was a scientist, so that's why he had nothing to do with spiritual or paranormal aspects of life. And in those years, 19th century, nobody knew about the UFOs or extraterrestrial beings. For them, yes, there was a supernatural force, but it was two things, angels and demons. So for them, if a being who visits you had a nice-looking face with light, white robes and everything, it was an angel. But if it comes from the darkness, a scary look, scared face, just like my grandfather had the experience, it was a demon. So for our family, for many generations, the visitors were demons. But after many years later, when I started to read, research, and write about this aspect of the encounters, I can clearly see that they were reptilians. And now many people all over the world are talking about the reptilian aspects of the extraterrestrial contact. And the other thing is that, as you know, I'm from Turkey, and our country has a very, very ancient tradition, ancient history. Our history goes back 12,000 years ago. So many different civilizations had their own experiences with the visitors from outer space. Our very first ancestors in Turkey were Hittites. So Hittites had their close encounters with visitors as well. The other thing is that in Turkey, we have natural underground sea, especially in the Cappadocia region, which is the central part of our country. I showed the pictures in many of my conferences. I wrote articles about it, but I'm going to repeat it again. They are a huge web of underground cities carved by the human force using materials, obviously, because they carved them inside of the natural cave system. And when you look at them, they were carved perfectly well. They were prepared for a very large number of pupils to live there for a long time. And the underground cities of Turkey have 27 floors under the ground, 27 floors deep. Each level is linked to each other with steps, stairs, and tunnels. And they go back to 10,000 years ago, historically, archaeologically. And again, historically and archaeologically, we don't know who were the people who built them, and we really don't know what was the purpose. But when you look at them, there are chambers, houses, with two rooms, three rooms, some of them had temples. So it is very clear that some intelligent beings, some very intelligent beings, with technological devices, built the underground cities. And again, when we go back to our archaeological and mythological sources in Turkey, they say that there were a resilient snake race who were living there, and their origin is unknown. And talking about the reptilians, again, in Turkey, in the same area, we have a mythological tradition, and I really believe that most of the mythological traditions are based on the real cases. People believe that in underground cities, there is a half-woman, half-snake queen, and she is the ruler of the underground world. And we call her Shahmaran. It means that the king, the queen of the snake. And they say that if anybody meets her, she keeps him or her in the underground cave and doesn't let him go out to the surface. So this brings us to the goddess belief system. As we know, in most of the cultures, goddess is also represented by snakes. That's why in many sculptures or art objects or in the paintings, goddess is represented together with the snake. So when you put together all this information, it really gives us almost a clear idea about the ancient visitor's effect.
Yes. Yes, I was closing my eyes and visualizing this underground city in Turkey. And I think there's other places on the planet that are very similar. And is it your understanding that the reptilian race came from Draco? Is that your understanding?
Okay, this is what we hear. This is what we are told. But of course, I don't have solid proof to say that, yes, they are coming from Draco. But again, the name, the words, and the historical events show that, yes, they may be coming from Draco.
Yeah. So how has your life been, you know, since you discovered possibly that there was more to this than what your grandfather, your grandmother, and your mother came to know? Do you feel like that you were put in this position to tell this story and to enlighten people and to let them know that there's more to all of this than they ever suspected? Do you think that's your role?
Well, I think that I had no other choice because, of course, I was very much interested in these topics since I was a little child. And one more thing, in Turkey, in our lifestyle, these things are not forbidden. It may be UFOs or extraterrestrial beings or paranormal cases or spiritual aspects. They are not forbidden to speak up. In every family, people talk about them openly. There are no secrets. And it was the same way in my own family. So not only this one, we had other interesting stories as well. Many. And they were always around our family. So I'm not surprised, in fact. And first I was, how can I say, when I started to read books or to go to meetings, of course, I just wanted to learn more. But after a while, you get the need to write. And then I started to write articles first and after that books. And I think that with everything that I write or in the conferences, in my lectures, yes, I can say something different. And that different thing can be helpful to other people's questions because we are not the only family who has this kind of experiences, especially in the United States, as well as in Turkey, in South America. I met many people who had the same experiences, just like my family did. We have a common, we have something common. But some people cannot describe them. Some people cannot have a name to describe it. And some other people have a more clear idea based on their knowledge and based on their experience.
You write for the UFO magazine, is that correct?
Yes. I'm a columnist for United States UFO magazine. And I'm also writing for Italian, in Italy, X Times magazine.
Oh, great.
So yes, it's a wonderful magazine. Both of them are great magazines.
Right. Would you like to give information to our radio audience about how to contact you? Could you give us your website or your email address?
It is the easiest thing to contact me thanks to internet technology. I guess it is very easy to find anybody on this world now. I have a website, my name and my last name, farahyurducu.com. But also, I'm on Facebook. So since I started to use the Facebook, I practically don't use any other email or my website. So with or without knowing, now I'm being publicity about Facebook in this moment. But just like many other people, we use it. And I have there my name, my picture, my email address. So anybody wants to contact me, I am there.
Okay, I'll give the spelling. It's F-A-R-A-H. Last name, Y-U-R-D-O-Z-U. Again, F-A-R-A-H-Y-U-R-D-O-Z-U. And so if they type that into Google, your name comes up, right? Of how to,
yes,
to see your,
yes,
blog?
Yes, my website and all information is there.
Right. Yes. Well, I want to thank you for this brief interview and the time that you've given us to be on the show. I know this connection is not the very best, but we did want to hear from you. And as I said, I have read your story earlier to our radio audience. And I want to say bravo to you, Farah, for living the life that you've lived, to come through what you've experienced. You're a very brave and courageous woman. And we wish you well and hope that you bring us other stories and other investigations. And we will be keeping in touch. So thank you, Farah, for being on our show.
I would like to say we are on the same page. And thank you very much for having me as a friend in your world. Thank you.
Well, and you know, I did your chart the other day, and you are definitely starseed. And I really feel like that your role here on the planet was planned a very, very long time ago. And I am so glad that we found each other and that maybe we can continue doing work together on the planet. And it was because of Jerry Pippin that we really got together, and he's here in Oklahoma.
Yes.
I'm here in Oklahoma.
Yes.
So it was just kind of a family thing. Anyway,
thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And what I will do is I will download this now and send it to Ariel. Okay, thank you, honey.
Have a nice day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was quite the story. And Lavendar, I'm sure you're with us.
I'm here.
Any thoughts that you want to add?
Well, it's just that so many people are experiencing so many different things from maybe their bloodlines, and they talk to me weekly when I have clients about, oh, yeah, my grandmother did this or my aunt did that, and they had these apparitions and they can speak to ghosts. And I'm just really understanding more about how the bloodlines pass on through generations this electromagnetic psychic ability that's starting to really activate a lot of starseeds. And her story is just one example of that.
Well, it's certainly evident that that there are many races with advanced technologies and abilities, and they each have their interactions with humans. So, and speaking of different races, Pleiadian lineup is upon us once again. And for those listeners that maybe have not listened to our previous shows on Pleiadian lineup, Lavendar, do you want to kind of give us the brief description of what that is, how it works, and how are we involved?
Okay. So what is Pleiadian lineup? Well, a long, long time ago, an advanced civilization from the Pleiades star cluster introduced their genetics on planet Earth, and they observed the evolution of the species, experimenting with ways to further spiritual development. Atlantis, the ancient Egyptian and Greek civilizations were all Pleiadian projects, and their program energy signature was encoded and imprinted on DNA, the way that fingerprints are left behind when you touch something. This energy signature responds to its own origins like a radio tuned to one station. So during these times, two times a year, I open the gate from May 15th through the 20th and then November 15th through the 20th. And at this particular time, it's the November lineup. And this is the time when the Pleiadians have direct communication with a lot of their people on the planet. And back in 2009, in May, we had millions of walk-ins that came to the planet from the Pleiades. And I would just like to say that that during that period of time, they put certain things in motion. So this time, when the Pleiadians come to the planet, they're going to be checking on all the things that they set forth. And I would like to read from my list the things that they have been involved in and really doing some progressive work. Number one, scientific discoveries balancing out destructive measures. Atomic concerns are primary. Two, political figures being replaced by walk-ins or clones. Leaders of nations balancing the needs of the people with the planet. Three, implant technology will surface on a global scale of knowledge, along with GPS tracking from satellites placed by ETs instead of the government. Four, Nikola Tesla and the Tesla experiments at every level will be revealed, including cloning the Tesla kids on the planet, the ones that have his genius DNA and unfulfilled missions. Tesla was not Pleiadian, but was from Orion. Five, ET technology will surface and will force UFO disclosure to the masses, as other foreign countries will take the lead away from the United States. Six, Earth's planetary ecosystem with climate changes become predominant as more destruction, famine, loss of stability within the ecosystem demand changing of the guard. Stewards of gem powerpoints will be reinforced, as other stewards of the land will hold devices for frequency of balance and will become beacons of planetary balance. Seven, Alternative energy resources are demanded and given globally. 8. Food resources will change the nutritional value of nourishment. 9. Harmful chemicals will be identified and be neutralized on several levels. 10. The secret of Star Wars technology will be announced in detail to the masses. 11. Mind control technology will cause millions to go to the streets in outcry. 12. Ancient scrolls depicting past Pleiadian experiments will surface and be documented. 13. Quartz crystal will receive a new influx of entries, especially for starseed. 14. Crystal mines in Arkansas will reveal and give up the secrets from old Atlanteans. 15. HARP attached to military bases linked to cell phone towers and cell phones will be dismantled as the harmful effects can no longer be tolerated. 16. Cell phone manufacturers will install from the factory a device to protect the user from harmful radiation. It could take an act of Congress as more evidence points to cancer. 17. Volcanoes, earthquakes, and a shift in the Earth's axis will terminate many off the planet. 18. Migratory workers will also be included in this mass walk-in demonstration from all races, as traveling light and temporary residence is preferred by many. 19. Astrology, astronomy, science, religion come together in another alignment of reason. 20. Airplane travel will be a focus of many walk-ins, as an abundance of them are in the transportation, recreation business. Also food, hotel, recreation destinations will be areas of interchange for many starseed and walk-ins. 21. War of the Minds experiment will be so maximized that many will not make it on the planet, as many will die from heart attacks and fright, while others will instigate war with others that they do not understand. The blood coding faction will be launched in order for the balance to come forth for the changing of the guard. This also is in alignment when the sun will activate galactic center at 26 degrees of Sagittarius on December 21, 2012. With the present mixing of blood and the UFO disclosure on the planet, there seems to be no other way except to allow the war of the minds to take place without interference or intervention. The only intervention would be in cases of atomic war, and that is the safeguard, as this will not be tolerated. Many Pleiadian walk-ins have had this duty for a long time, and many of them will not be going home because of their dedication to preserve the planet and its people. A special leave of absence from the Pleiades was extended to these courageous beings, and the planet Earth will truly know of their sacrifice not to go home, as others will do. So basically, that is the program that was set forth in 2009, and so every May and every November, they come to take monitoring. They monitor through their special computerized implants that they have in people and on the planet, even through animals, trees, different places. The ancient sites, of course, are really activated at these particular times. So it's just a very, very exciting time to be on the planet and to observe the different things that happen at so many different levels. So basically, that's what Pleiadian lineup is. And also, I want to mention that the sun, it will be at 25, 26, and 27 degrees, and that's really the window of the activation. And some years it starts early, some years it starts later, and I noticed that it started on the 16th this time. So do you have anything you want to add?
Well, yes. As we have been noticing in the last few years, it does seem that while the official opening in frequency would happen when the sun is like 24:30, it activates the 25 degrees. So that is tomorrow night, just about midnight, Wednesday night, or I guess midnight would be considered Thursday morning, but Wednesday late, and then it continues through about noon on Sunday. But as we have observed in the past several Pleiadian lineups is that people are reporting activations, experiences, a couple of days prior, and it can linger on after about a week, even though the official alignment is about 3.5 days.
Yeah, but what I really noticed the most is when it activates Cairo, Egypt, when the Great Pyramid of Giza, it seems to resonate from there first and then comes this way.
So that could account for the time offset a little
right.
bit because, like in Australia, they're 16 hours ahead of us, so technically in Australia the sun has already gone into galactic degree.
Right.
And when it comes over Cairo, then that's probably the ground zero, I suppose, if you want to call it that, for the major gong that happens. Now,
yeah, I seem to feel it when it hits Cairo. I personally feel it when it hits Cairo.
Well, I'm sure with your history there, that makes perfect sense. Now, for other people and our listeners on a personal level, so we see the overall big picture now about what Pleiadian lineup is, but is there something that a person can do as, you know, as someplace during these 3 days to go out into nature, to get really quiet and still, do some kind of a meditation or reach out in contact to the Pleiadians, charging up crystals. I mean, these are all things that we can do on an individual basis as well as holding the knowledge of what is happening on a global basis. If you have crystals, if you make sure that that they're properly cleaned in salt and water or salt and vinegar and laid out in the sun during the noon hours on those 3 days, that they will receive these Pleiadian frequencies and hold them. And you can do this, you can do it every month when the sun is at galactic degree, but doing it especially in May and November gives the Pleiadian frequencies to the crystals to hold. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, many, many years ago, right after I got back from Cairo, Egypt, I had like, so many hundreds of crystals. And every month I would take them all out into the sun, which was quite a project. I mean, it was like an all-day thing to get that many crystals out in the sun and then bring them back in and then get ready for the next month. And I had to plan my trips and all the things in my life, knowing that I would have to be, you know, at home with the crystals to put them out in the sun. And I did this for 7 straight years.
Wow.
So it was quite a labor of love, and a lot of experiences happened because of it too. So it's what a person feels like they want to do during this time. The thing that I want to stress about it is you don't have to do anything. Your DNA, if you're part Pleiadian, if you're part of a gigantic global group mind on the planet, the one thing that will happen, whether you notice it or not, is you'll just take a step up. It's about a step up. It's about a frequency up.
So there's no... there's no need to, I mean, if you feel like you'd like to,
yeah.
in a form of, you know, celebration or acknowledgement, that's great. But you don't, I mean, you could just go to sleep and let yourself absorb the frequencies on a subconscious level. And I remember your description that at this time that it's a great day of celebration for the Pleiadians because they are... you know, checking in on their offspring, on their friends and family who are in body down here, and you kind of described it as a Super Bowl event where everybody wants to gather around and see what's happening on Earth. And they call it Earth Day?
The Celebration of the Blue Planet.
Celebration of the Blue Planet. Well, that ought to make us feel honored. And I don't know what the word is I'm searching for, but we should honor our heritage, I guess.
I also noticed that during these times that we have, you know, some major announcements of things that happen on the planet. When you look back through history, you notice that a lot of things take place, you know, in that week. And now that we have Wikipedia and you know, the way to research, you just see that a lot of things are happening on those dates. You know, it just seems to be a week of a lot of activity.
You know, when you were reading the lists of objectives of the Pleiadians, when you said millions take to the streets in outcry,
yeah,
I couldn't help thinking of the Occupy America movement, which
and also in Egypt and all over the world.
Absolutely. But the thing is that we've seen that on TV a lot of times in other countries. But I think this is the first time that we've really seen people taking to the streets and really trying to change things. There's a unity there, you know, that they call themselves the 99%.
And it's going to continue over different subject matters. This one is about money and resources and the banks, but wait till other things start coming up and become globally known. You're going to see them go to the streets again.
Well, if they can evoke change by doing it this time, then the formula has been set, and then the next time, you know, the silent majority is outraged about something, then they already know how to get things changed. If they can succeed with this first movement, then it will be, you know, truly power to the people.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, we have a question on the switchboard, and if you're ready to start taking some questions and comments from callers, we'll get into that.
Okay, fine.
All right. Hello, Therese, you're on the air.
Hi, Lavendar. It's Therese from Brooklyn, New York.
Well, hello.
How are you?
Good.
You mentioned the changes, I guess, frequency that's going to affect us the next 3 days or even a couple of days before. What type of frequency or vibration should we be expecting?
I don't think it's so much about expecting as it is to be aware of yourself and to be aware of who you are. It helps you to, if you're in the right frame of mind, to strengthen your will. It's on a personal level, it's about strengthening your will to make the wise decisions that you're needing to make in the coming, you know, months ahead. It's kind of like a beam of energy that goes up and down your spine and just makes you stand up. That kind of energy.
Oh, okay. Because I've got the, like, I've been hearing this sound on my right ear and sort of like a bit of a strong headaches kind of lately. You know, pressure in the forehead. I don't know if these are type of signals I should be expecting, and if it's very painful, what I can do about that.
First, let me ask you, do you live very close to a cell phone tower?
I'm in New York City.
Well, of course.
I'm in Brooklyn, yeah. But it sort of happens not all the time, only like certain part of, like, when I'm before, you know, meditating before I go to bed or just in my silence. Kind of.
Well, I know that New York City has a lot of cell phone towers and cell phones, and it's a place that really needs some help with the frequencies, because when you start adding up everything that's happening there, and then you've got ships that come in and they start beaming down energies, yeah, I imagine there's going to be a few headaches. It's kind of like over the top.
Right, and what are your recommendations, or if any, that we can do about that?
Until they get a handle on how to handle the cell phones, the cell phone towers, I just think you just kind of have to hold on. And I do a lot of salt baths, and I do, mm-hmm. I use, you know, different things for different times.
Okay.
You know, 0 point energy pendants are good to wear. You know, purchasing an MRS 2000, which is quite expensive, but it really shuts down all the other frequencies that are bothering the body.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Just trying to stay in the positive mind frame to receive the healing and the activation.
Okay. Thank you for calling in.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Therese. You know, I think that it would. I would also add, because I know what she was talking about, just over the years, things that I've heard from people, and it really can, when you get an influx of energy like that. And I'm not talking about physical energy like 10 cups of coffee, but when you get higher light frequencies coming to you, it can be a little uncomfortable as your body adjusts to the, you know, the lighter form, and certainly if you have a lot of toxins in your body, that would kind of make it a little more unpleasant. But the good news is that you're going to come out at a better, higher place, even though you know, you might have a headache, or you might have some restless night, or dreams, any kind of thing that might be out of the ordinary for these days. Just know that it's part of a process, and that you do have a personal high command, is what I call them, your personal guardians, who they've got your back. So just roll with it, and always try to stay focused on your alignment and maintaining it.
Right.
So in just a minute here, I'm going to check in with the chat room. But there was something that, and that was a heads up to you, Purple Sage, was that subtle enough? I wanted to ask you, Lavendar, two weeks ago, I mentioned briefly, because it was November 1st, that it was Avatar Day, and then we went on through the show and never really came back to the topic. Now, I've had a few people contact me with a question about that, and if you would, please, just kind of explain the meaning and significance of Avatar Day, and then we'll go to the chat room.
Avatar Day is observed on November 1st and May 1st, and these are frequencies and energies that come from different beings that are on different spaceships around the planet, and it holds a very, very high spiritual gong, or a frequency that has to do with lifting the spiritual essence of everybody on the planet. And sometimes we have been told that on these days that the avatars of the past ages come together and from other lifetimes, whether they're in body now on the planet or wherever they are, they come and join this frequency to do an upliftment for the planet. And you know, the Halloween time, the October 31st, is the 24 hours that we've been told that some of the Christ consciousness will leave the planet, that will leave the planet and let everybody kind of be on their own for 24 hours, and that's kind of where the mischievous part of Halloween came, because on November 1st, it's always the big readout about the avatars and making adjustments on the planet. So basically, that's it.
So I just imagine this like a schoolroom where the teacher walks out and just looks to see who continues to do their homework and who starts to do hijinks.
Yeah.
And then when they come back the next day and they say, you know, okay, the cat was away. Let's find out who played. but yeah, that's Avatar Day, and it's November 1st and May 1st. And it is the readout on, you know, what happens when you take the Christ consciousness off the planet for a day. And it's kind of like taking the training wheels off, and you get to see where we wobble and where we fall down, and then in that way they know what areas need more work.
That's right.
So it's always for our betterment.
Yeah, I like the way you explain things. Your Jupiter and Gemini really serves you, Ariel.
Oh yeah, I can always make analogies all day long. We are going to go to the chat room next and see if we have any comments or questions from there. And here we have, come on, click, click, click. Okay, Purple Sage.
Hello.
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 Hey. So hello to everybody in the chat room. How are we doing tonight?
Oh my goodness, the chat room is buzzing. I'm trying to keep up with them. There's so much excitement about this story, about tonight's show and everything that's going on. And I have to say, our guest last week, Meg Benedicte, for the 11-11 event,
uh-huh.
She did a two-day portal activation, which has me so high. I'm like pacing around trying to ground myself. It was such an excellent activation. And the energies are still working if anybody decides they want to go to her website and listen and participate in those activations. They're great.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you brought that up, Purple Sage, because I had in my mind to mention that before the show was over, because I listened to both of those broadcasts, and they're so powerful, and it really, everybody, if you honor your starseed status, you need to take part and do your part. And I posted links to both of those shows on our headline news page, because I thought it was so important. I'm also going to post it in the forum, but I just haven't had time to do that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So all you have to do is go to our starseedhotline.com, click on the scrolling banner that says headline news, and then scroll down the page until you see the Meg Benedicte Global Activation for 11-11-11. So thank you so much for bringing that up. And,
sure.
Do we have any questions or comments either about Farrah's story or Pleiadian lineup?
We do, and I just wanted to also make a comment about Pleiadian lineup. The meetings I know have begun, because I was at several today, and a lot of people, Lavendar, will want to know. I guess it's different for everybody, but a lot of people will want to know what it feels like if you know that you're being taken to one of those meetings.
It's not about feeling. It's a DNA activation, and people that are aware of who they are get a lot more from it than people that don't know who they are.
Right. Okay.
Okay. It's about your consciousness and where you are in the scheme of things.
Mm-hmm. So if you know who you are and you know that this is Pleiadian lineup, and you know you're kind of, you know, if you're looking for some way to feel or whatever, you just kind of use your consciousness and go from there? I mean, some people are wanting to know.
Yeah, it's a time for you to be more alert and aware that other beings have come to the planet to beam mm-hmm. energies down to the planet on frequencies that will either activate your DNA, activate your missions on the planet, gives you aha moments after it's over. It's like maybe you won't feel it right away, but maybe 3 or 4 days from now you'll wake up and go, I need to write some music, or I need to write an article, or I need to take a trip to Egypt. It's an aha time after it's over.
Yep.
Right. Okay. And I would think that unlike the Teton meeting, it's not really a meeting, where like it would be at the Tetons when the 144,000 people every 45 minutes get hauled in and, downloaded and then sent back out again. So, yeah, this is about observation. It's about the Pleiadians initiating new projects, about checking on ongoing projects, and about concluding projects that have come to completion. And
it's always about a step up. Always.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I do have some questions here from the chat room. One of our listeners wants to know, Lavendar, if you know about the exopolitics updates on the Andromedans and the elimination of their underground bases. Or if you dare speak about it.
I have seen emails about it, and I'm just, being very quiet about that right now. I'm very aware of it. I choose not to comment on it at this time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Understood. Another listener wants to know if Pleiadians have physical bodies.
Yes, they do.
Okay. I know that when I was getting visitations from them, mine came in light bodies, so they are able to change.
Yes, they are.
Okay. The same listener wants to know if Jesus was Pleiadian.
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then can you describe the Pleiadian language?
No. I don't know how to.
Well, I mentioned to the person that you probably wouldn't be able to. I have heard that it's like a sing-songy type. We wouldn't be able to understand it, but it's very sing-songy.
There's a universal language that they all use. Like we use English here on our planet.
Mm-hmm.
They have a universal language that all the species have learned to use, and it depends on whether they want to go telepathic or whether they actually want to make sounds. They're very advanced in their universal language.
Yeah.
Very hard to describe. It's like one time I came back and I could not describe the colors that I had seen because we didn't have colors here for me to make reference to. It's that
I know. That's so hard to imagine. I know when my Pleiadians have talked to me, it's telepathy. I don't hear their voice, so I couldn't say either.
Yeah.
I have a, just as I was being called on, a new question came in. So I copied and pasted it. I'm just going to read it off to you.
Okay.
How do you know if you need silica? And how do you request a physical encounter with the Pleiadians during this time to become more active in the activations, or to see them, hear them, or to know how they are around?
Can I take that one?
Yeah, go ahead and take. In fact, I need to leave the phone for like 3 minutes. Go ahead and take that. I'll be right back.
Okay. If you use a cell phone, a computer, or live near a cell phone tower, you need silica. Because silica, I mean, those electromagnetics, radiations pull the silica out of your body. Starseed were designed to require more silica than the non-starseed population because it is, I always liken it to a cell phone because your communication with your high command, which is, you can call them celestial overseers, but every single starseed has beings that agreed to stay behind as your overseers, guardians, guides, whatever you want to call them. I just call them high command. And silica is necessary for that communication and connection to exist. And if, just like when you're on a cell phone and you don't have enough bars of signal and you can't hear the other person, that's what happens if you don't have enough silica. If you think that, especially if you have the mark of ship communication in your natal chart and you've never been aware of anything like that, then that would be an indication that you need more silica. Now, as far as requesting a personal encounter with the Pleiadians, it's kind of the other way around. If your frequency is high enough, in other words, if you hold enough light, they'll call you. And if you don't hold enough light, if your frequency isn't high enough, you can call till the cows come home, and they can't do anything because you're not, you know, just be like a 3-year-old picking up the phone and wanting to hear Einstein's theories. If you just aren't quite there yet, which is not to say that you can't get there really quickly, but it's they will, when you are of age, so to speak, in frequency alignment to them, then the interaction, the communication, and the relationship will become way more frequent and evident. So it's and I'm not sure that I mean, speaking for myself, even though I am Pleiadian and I've been doing this work for 20 years and you know, learned a lot of things from Lavendar, and if they showed up in my house, I think I'd freak out. I'd rather just know that they're there in energy and telepathy. I don't know if I could go back to you know, doing my laundry and dishes every day after I've seen a glimpse of that, you know. And I remember a story that Lavendar told, because, you know, when they take you up in the ship, they give you a shot to make you forget. You come back with the information or the work or the directive, but you forget all the visual stuff that goes with it. And I remember one time Lavendar said that I you know how Lavendar is a little bit of a outspoken, shall we say, and she's like, I don't want those shots. I want to remember. So they said, okay, fine. They gave her way, and she said that when she came back, she couldn't function for 3 weeks because of what she'd seen. So the next time it was like she says, can I have my shots, please? So I hope that answers your question.
I think so. But Ariel, when you said that you think that you would be afraid, when mine came,
I didn't mean that I would be afraid. I used the word freak out, but I just didn't.
Oh, freak out. Okay.
Not in fear. It would just, yeah, it would be something that would make such an impression on me that it would change everything that I have learned to you know, to be able to cope with 3D. So yeah, in that way, it might be something that once it happens, you can never make it unhappen.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
And besides, if your frequency isn't at the right level, it won't happen anyway.
Yeah. And I guess depending on who we are, what our mission here is, whatever, everybody has a different type of experience. You know, some can be very loving and some are not so loving. Some are not so nice, in fact.
Well, it's because we use our own 3D system of love as the yardstick. And the Pleiadians and advanced beings in general, all of the benevolent ones that we're familiar with, their love is of a different nature. And it's not the kind of love that, you know, like people expect to, you know, like untouched by an angel, that kind of, you know, warm you up kind of thing. Their love
right.
is of such a different dimension that it doesn't feel like the love. And, you know, and if they have to do something because they know that it's necessary for your growth and your own good, you might not like it. Just like, you know, a little kid not wanting to eat their peas. You know, they could think that, you know, mom's really mean because she made me eat those awful things. Well, they didn't, you know, it's just, it's the same level of our not being able to understand. And what may be really ultimately for our good. But, I mean, I will say that that there are, you know, certain races that are not here for our benefit, but they're really in the minority. And I really, really hope that our listeners don't have to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mine, for one, have been very, very nice experiences. So I don't want to freak anybody out.
Yeah.
I have another question that just came in. Are
okay.
there protective codes when we feel dense energies or a way to invoke cosmic protection?
Oh, that's a good question, and I hope Lavendar is back. Are you?
I'm back. Go ahead and say that again.
Are there protective codes when we feel dense energies or a way to invoke cosmic protection?
Yes, there's, you know, once you're in a situation where you feel like there's dense energies, like parasitic or negative energies coming at you, all you do is you power up. You power up and you just, from the bottom of your spine to the top of your head, you just visualize in your spine. Sometimes I use a cobalt blue light, and sometimes I'll use gold. It depends. Sometimes I'll use emerald green. It depends on how you want to suit up. It's about powering up. It's about going into your courage, going into being brave at the moment. And everyone has that capability, regardless of level a person's on in their consciousness, if they just simply would, you know, you bring your energy up, go down and bow your head and hope that somebody comes to protect you, okay? You power up and face it straight on.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of chat in the chat room about people having the ringing in their ears, and that right now it seems to be pretty loud.
Like I said, the cell phone tower, cell phone technology on the planet, and then when the ships come in and they start beaming down, it can really play havoc with your ears.
Right.
Just a condition.
Sure. So it's a condition, it's not the energies, actually, that we're discussing. It's like
it's a combination.
Yeah.
It's a combination. Okay. If you were on top of a mountain in Tibet, out of the thought stream, away from cell phone towers, and then the galactic energy came in, it would not be as likely to cause a physical sensation. Would you say that's true, Lavendar?
True.
But
well, it depends on the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a rule for this.
Okay. then my feeling on it then, I guess, was wrong in that if you're not used to the higher energies, you get that until you are used to them. So that's wrong.
I partly agree with that.
You're right. It's just not. It doesn't apply to everybody.
Right.
There's no one hard and fast rule that applies to everybody, because there is such a mix of energy. If you think of all the different notes of all the songs you've ever heard in your life going off at the same time, you know, unless you can just focus on one song, it could give you a bit of a, you know, ringing ears or headache.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really about the person and the moment.
Yeah.
And then if they turn on harp during this period of time, oh, it's really havoc.
Well, speaking of harp, I don't know. I have a seismic monitor on my computer, and I look on it daily, and to see all of the places that are having earthquakes daily that haven't had them in, you know, a gazillion years, and they're having them like daily in the U.S. especially.
I know we've had them here in Oklahoma, and it's really a big surprise to see it happening here in Oklahoma. Although I tried to get my agent to sell me earthquake insurance last year, and he laughed at me and said I didn't need it.
And Oklahoma has had most of the earthquakes in the U.S. In the last 2 months.
Yeah.
Almost every day. I have one more question for you guys. Athena, somebody wants to know if she was Pleiadian.
Yes.
Okay, that sums it up.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. I mean, all of the Greek, the gods of mythology, were they not, Lavendar?
That's right.
Was that all part of the same?
That's right.
Pleiadian program. Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent.
Okay.
Like I said, the chat room is buzzing, so if you come back later, I'm sure I'll have some more.
Okay, we'll do that. Well, I'll try to do that. We've only got about 20 minutes left in the show, so
okay.
We have two more questions to get to on the switchboard, and we will try to get back to the chat room before the end of the show. So
mm-hmm.
Talk to you soon.
Sure.
Okay, thanks so much, Purple Sage.
Yep, bye-bye.
Okay, we have another question. Let's see if I can get you on the air. Okay, Jewel, you're on the air. Would you like to ask your question?
Yes. I have been noticing that and talking to people, and some of them are experiencing the energy as like joy, peace, and happiness, and then some people are just getting really irritated, and there's times when what's happening for me, when I get around discordant energy, sometimes, I don't know, I'm saying energy that aren't vibrating in the same, you know, I'm doing my best to stay in this joy, you called it powering up, I like that, but I do my best to stay in that joy frequency or gratitude frequency or love frequency, but sometimes I just feel kind of like when I get around certain people, I just feel kind of drained, and then I have to go to sleep, and sometimes I just woke up, and I was wondering, would that have anything to do with what I'm eating, and if you could give me any more. I've been doing a lot of meditations. I've done a lot of stuff with Meg and things like that, and I am feeling better. And there's times when I can, you know, stay in my frequency no matter what's happening. But I just wondered if you could, and you've given us a lot of information, but I just wondered if you could give me some more, please.
Okay. You know, when you're climbing the ladder of consciousness, you'll reach a plateau,
and you'll wear it for a little while, and then you get ready to go further. And sometimes, if you're not quite ready, it'll put you to bed. You just, it's a timing mechanism. You just kind of have to know when to push ahead and when to you know, stop. And as far as being around negative people or negative situations, that shows mostly that you are attracting or hooked up to maybe some people that may be parasitic and may be draining your energy. So sometimes you just need to get the sword out and cut them loose, and then it'll stop. That
okay.
sometimes happens. But keeping your silica intake, you know, notice your hair and notice your fingernails. If your fingernails get really, really brittle and they won't grow, then you probably have a silica depletion. And silica makes you stronger to where you won't be so susceptible to having these parasitic energies come and, you know, take a straw and go, you know. I find that what you choose to eat does matter. It does matter. Staying away from aspartame, MSG, read the labels when you go to the store. If you can't pronounce it, don't buy it. that's basically it.
Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Right now I'm looking at a bottle of super silica. It's by Positive Power Nutritionals. Is there a certain kind of silica additive that you suggest to put in your water, or is that one okay? I've been using it for quite some time because I started feeling really sick, and somebody suggested that I use this, and then I when I don't use it, I feel really bad.
Yeah, so that gives you the clue, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah, because I've been doing it for like months. I've been doing it for months now. So is there another kind of silica, or is this one okay?
Well, that one's fine, but the one I use, it's called, let's see, Highlands 30X Silica. And I take about 5 or 6 little tablets and let them dissolve under my tongue, and I keep it in my bedroom. I keep it by my computer, and whenever I think about it, I just pop them in my mouth.
Okay, Highlands... again, is it Highlands what?
It's a homeopathic. It's homeopathic silica. You get it at the health food store.
And I would interject here that there's not like one that's the best for everybody, because some people will respond to one and not the other, and some people have really good luck with one, but not everybody. So it's if you say that you've been taking this and when you don't take it, you feel really bad, I think that's a good indication that you've got a good one for you. Today broke, don't fix it.
Okay. One more quick question. Okay, Lavendar, you say don't bow, you know who you are, and don't bow down to lesser people that are lesser. Is that what you're saying, that people that are lesser than you? Or are you saying know who you are? I feel like that we're, you know, that I'm love. And that, you know, that when I get in contact with the fear energy, that sometimes I maybe get sucked into it. Maybe we're saying the same thing using different words. Maybe I'm totally off. But so I interpret it when you said that as don't bow down to fear and stay, you know, in my love frequency. Does that make any sense? And I know about the cutting people off. I have been working on that, you know, like you know, keeping light around me, because I can't, because this person that is in this fear energy, she's my daughter, and my granddaughter is like caught in that. And, you know, it's not like I can, you know, completely cut her off. If I knew how to stay in her, be in her present as briefly as I could and protect myself and help my granddaughter protect herself, does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm trying to ask you now?
Yes. Well, one of the things that I have learned through the years is do not respond to a negative energy. Don't give it any play. Don't go on polarity with it. Get very steady. Just let them rant and rave all they want to. And when they're through ranting and raving, just simply say, sounds right to me, turn the window, and do not respond into polarity. Polarity will start to drain you.
And feed the other, and feed the thing that you're wanting to not experience.
I find that if I ignore it, it just goes away. I just don't respond. I turn the window. They can just keep on and on and on, and it just doesn't matter. I've moved on.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. You're quite welcome, Jewel. Thank you for calling. Well, we have another caller. I was just going to say, we've got Ralph with us, and I'm going to pick up just here. Give me a second. Okay, Ralph, you are on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much. A very good program, even though there's no live guest. I mean, these are the best anyway, I think. Anyway, I had a quick question, though, for Lavendar, if you don't mind. Lavendar, you made a list of things that I don't know what the list really was. Was it of things that were going to happen during the Palladium lineup, or things that would happen as a result of the Palladium lineup? And one of the things you said would happen was that a lot of politicians would have walk-ins, and there was a change of the guard. When will that happen?
Well, it started the list that I read was put. Those were the codes of activity placed in 2009, when they brought in all those walk-ins. And so every May and November, it's always a step up to see how all those programs are doing.
It's an ongoing thing, Ralph.
Oh, okay.
It's an ongoing project in progress.
Okay, I got you. Alrighty. I just had another real quickie. During the Palladium lineup, will we will we have a chance, or will we be kind of nudged to send to another dimension? Fourth or fifth?
I don't think it's about that. No, I don't.
Okay.
That's not really part of the frequencies that come and partake. Depends on who you are. If you're ready to go into other dimensional knowledge or time travel, that will be because you have earned the right to do that with your consciousness.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling, Ralph.
Thanks, Ralph. Good to hear from you. Really, it really is. It's like a school. And, you know, if you have been on the fast track and you learn things really fast and you don't have to be told more than once, and, you know, you can, just like you were in school, skip some grades and move more quickly. But if you're not if you haven't done all the homework and done all the frequency work, things happen differently depending on where you are. And it's not really about the Pleiadians coming in and just infusing you, and you are magically transported to the next level. If you're not ready for that, that would be harmful to you, and they would never harm you. So, we still have about 10 minutes left here. I'm going to go back to the chat room and see if we have any additional questions. I can't believe how quickly this show has just flown by. Okay, Purple Sage, we're back.
Hiya.
Hello.
Chat room is still zinging, but I don't have any questions.
Okay, well, we can handle no questions. All right.
Did Sierra ever come online?
You know, I looked for her number a while ago, and I didn't see it. Let me just check again.
Oh, I do. Can I say something?
Mm-hmm.
People are asking about Belva, how she's doing.
Yes, I talked to Belva yesterday, and they did a CAT scan to make sure that her brain wasn't bleeding, and she has not received the report yet. She has some loss of vision in one of her eyes and one of her ears. She can't hear out of one of her ears, and having double vision in her eyes. Her bruises are getting better. She's getting stronger. And so we just should also be mindful of keeping her in our thoughts and sending the emerald right to her whenever we can think about it.
Absolutely.
I agree. I did talk to her myself as well. And her spirit is just as strong as ever, and she's convinced that this whole mishap was to make her a better healer and a better helper for other people. And she's also quite sure that this loss of vision and hearing is because it's a side effect of the medication that she's having to take, and she's got a doctor that wants to get her off of that as quickly as possible. So she is she's in good spirits though, but we do appreciate everyone thinking of Belva and sending her the Emerald Ray. So we just got another. Purple Sage. Do we have another?
I just had one come in. Somebody wants to know if chakras and frequency go hand in hand, such as frequency work.
Well, the chakras of your body are spinning in a certain direction, and it keeps, you know, the body emotionally, physically, spiritually, etherically intact. So when these frequencies come from our space brothers, whether the Pleiadian or any other group, and they're all in all the chakras are spinning in the right directions, it does empower one in their DNA sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but you can have two people who both have their did I just get disconnected?
I hear
Hello?
You.
Hello? You're still there? Okay. I heard a funny noise, and I thought maybe I'd been disconnected. You can have two people, and they both have their chakras spinning and in the right direction, but even the two people, they could be like in two different keys.
Mm-hmm.
You could have one person perfectly in tune in the key of C, and then you can have another person perfectly in tune in the key of G, which would be higher in frequency. So I guess the chakras are like the instrument, and the frequency is the key you're playing in.
I'd also like to say that there's a very simple exercise, and I'm passing it on to my clients, and that is when you're sitting and starting to meditate, breathe in the color purple and exhale blue three times. And it's a very simple exercise. And to visualize the oxygen coming into your lungs and being purple air and then exhaling blue, there's something that happens in a DNA sequence when you do it three times. Really works. Mm-hmm. Simple. It's so simple, you go, wow, I didn't know how simple that could be.
That's great.
Agreed.
I love that.
And also to go along with the toning that you were talking about, Ariel, everybody's body has its own frequency. And if you go into meditation, whether you hear it in your mind's ear or through your physical ears, you can hear your own tone that rings out into the universe.
Oh, completely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
Good point.
Yeah. Do we have time to talk about crystals?
Sure.
Okay. Some people are saying, it's about time to bring the crystals out. And other people are wanting to know, how do you know that your crystals, once you bring them in, have Pleiadian energy? I know for my crystals, I took them out for the full moon. And I've left them out, and they'll stay out until the end of Pleiadian lineup. But there's people that want to know, how do you know they have Pleiadian energy?
It's not so much about the Pleiadian energy as it is about the rays from the sun. The sun has the 25, 26, 27 degree frequency that are placed in the crystals. And they will resonate to universal code and universal language regardless of species. It just happens to be the Pleiadians come at this time because it's their turn.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Well.
Well, yeah, so if your crystals are out during that time, there's no way, I mean, you wouldn't have to, you just know that they're there. You know, if the crystals are out in the sun, that's the way they respond. They absorb those frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to tell if you did the if you took them outside. That's it's inevitable.
Absolutely. I know if you're sensitive to the energies, they'll almost zap you when you go to pick them up to bring them in. They're so full of energy.
You know, one time I had all my crystals out during a Pleiadian lineup. I believe it was in Maya's in Cripple Creek. And I thought, oh, I think I'll just go lay down in the middle of them and just, you know, really soak it up. Biggest mistake of my life. I was almost a crispy critter. It was way too much, you know, way too much. But I had to learn the hard way. So, you know, do not lay down with a whole bunch of crystals at high noon on Pleiadian lineup. It's not a good idea.
I used to picture, like, your hair standing straight up and your eyes like saucers.
Yeah.
She's serious about it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly what happened.
It's not, you know, in those days I was into, oh, I want to feel good. Well, it doesn't make you feel good.
Really, it's about the alignment of the work to be done on the planet, and it's not like. Yeah, you're going to be, you know, turned into a superhero.
Yeah, well, my silica got fried in my whole body. So it's like too much of it, you know, it was like an overdose.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, especially with, I mean, the way you are, like, you're like a bare wire when it comes to energies. You're so sensitive, so.
But at that time, I had those Giza crystals implanted in my teeth. I had all my mercury taken out and put the Gizas inside, you know, my teeth, which, what a mistake that was. So there I was in the middle of hundreds of crystals with those Giza crystals. And it's, you know, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Plenty of comedy scenes that I could describe with that one. Yeah, it's just overload. So, well, anything else before we conclude?
No, that's it. And I thank you guys for answering so many questions.
Well, it just worked out that's where the questions were coming from, and we certainly do appreciate your input, especially since I still don't see Sierra's number, so. I know she had a board meeting this evening and was hoping to get out in time to join us for the last half, but.
I have something I want to say.
Okay.
You know, our friend Tammy, she went to Hot Springs, Arkansas, and had a wonderful time during 11-11-11. She went to the Arlington Hotel, and I just want to do a shout out for Tammy for taking that trip and representing all the starseeds on the planet, because she did some amazing, amazing work. And I think she's on the switchboard tonight. If she has anything she wants.
She is, yeah. Hey, Tammy,
we got
you're
2 minutes.
Air. Tammy, you're on the air for the last 60 seconds of the show.
Hello there.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm still trying to recoup from my Arkansas trip. It was, it was an out-of-this-world experience. I'll just put it that way. It's going to take me a couple of weeks to get it all straight in my head. So much happened. But I'm so grateful to have been there and to be there as a starseed and do the work.
Well, maybe when you have it all straight, you can come on the air and tell us all the story.
Sure, it would be my pleasure.
And in the meantime, we only got 20 seconds. I'm sorry, we only have 20 seconds left, Tammy, so we will bring you on the next time. And to everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week, Tuesday, Lavendar, Purple Sage, Tammy, and Sierra, wherever you are. Thank you so much, everyone, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.